Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Every Tuesday, I just put my feet up and welcome in a friend, and that is Neil Coulon. My friend, welcome back.
As always, it is fantastic to be here. Thank you for having me.
All right, so the combine in Indianapolis, you know, and people get a long look at these players. How have you always viewed the value of the combine?
Value of the combine, I think, to say it flat out, it's a team's ability to get time with the player, to talk to them just about who they are, try to get to know them ahead of the pro day circuit. I would say this to anybody that disagrees with that. The one thing everyone that goes to Indy for the combine does is interview. The marquee guys don't throw, they don't lift, they don't run. They will interview. They show up to do the interview piece of it. Yeah. General managers, while they're essentially forced by the NFL to go speak, which is the only reason media go to the combine, they're there to watch and everything like that. Some of them might sit in with certain players, you know, as many as they can get. It's kind of tough to maneuver around to get to as many guys as you can. But the value is really just the conversation. It's one gigantic speed date between team personnel and prospect. And I would argue that that's a pretty smart way to do it. You know, it's hard to get everybody you want every team to have an equal opportunity to speak to as many players as they can. When you put it out to pro days, you kind of get to choose who takes you to dinner, you know, famously within the Steelers world. Mike Tomlin always seems to get the top guy at whatever pro day he goes to take him out to dinner. Not every team has necessarily the ability to do that. In a league that's driven by parity, that is very set up unilaterally, You want teams to have an equal opportunity. I think the combine is probably the best way to do that, to get everybody to know who the prospects are. And then, you know, if they're there, if they want to watch, confirm what you see on film. Make sure that, you know, the time that you get of this guy running a 40 is about what you think is right watching him on film. Maybe there's some medical questions or concerns that can come out of it. A player gets an opportunity to address something that might have happened during the season. It's a communications event more than a physical event. Let's put it that way. You know, we've joked for years about the underwear Olympics, and you know we'll make those jokes again, hopefully here in this segment, because it's always a good time. But in the end, they get the opportunity to show who they are as people, as young men, you know, auditioning for jobs. And I think teams weigh that pretty heavily in what they're trying to do. It helps them sort out who is a fit with them. From a character perspective, and who might not be.
All right, so I was on a show in Pittsburgh about an hour ago, and they were asking me of Joey Porter Jr., because every time they turn around in a mock draft, he's there. And I told him, I said, look, he'll test well this week. I mean, there's no doubt about that, he'll test well. And then, of course, they wanted to know about where he became better as a football player. When you look at a player like that, his father has NFL pedigree, obviously. He was an outstanding player in the NFL. What were your thoughts on him going into this draft?
A prototypical size for the position. He's lanky, and he moves like a kid who is a lot shorter than he is. And that's really kind of what you look for in a cornerback. You've got to have that reaction speed. It's a quickness position. And the tall, lanky guys don't tend to be that kind of sudden. He is, and he reminds me of, physically speaking, he reminds me of kind of a Richard Sherman, Antonio Cromartie type, the 6'1 guys with really long arms. Press corner all the way at the NFL level. There's a lot to like with him. I don't see him getting out of the top 12. I think it's obvious why people would mock him to the Steelers, and I would say the Steelers would absolutely love to draft him at 17. I don't think he's going to be there at 17. I agree with you, though, and you have a much better perspective of this than I do. He's going to test well. He's an athlete. He's I'm not saying he's a Hall of Famer just because this position has more volatility than any other in the draft. He is as prototypically built a frame of a cornerback with the athleticism the cornerback needs as we're going to see in this draft. Is he there as a player yet? Well, that's part of the development, which is to say, I mean, it's not often you get Jalen Ramsey, who's as, you know, secure a cornerback prospect as you're ever going to see. That's the guy that goes top three at that position. You just don't see that position drafted that high. Top 12 is really good for a cornerback prospect. I'd imagine that's probably where he'll end up. I mean, we'll see how it all shakes out, but he'll run well. He's explosive. He can jump. A lot to like with him. He's a fun player to watch.
And I get to watch all of it. It was great. The Omar Khan did talk with the media today, the first-year general manager of the Steelers. And he had praise for the offensive line. He had a lot of praise for the offense. The one area of the team he didn't have praise for, especially, was the secondary. What were your thoughts on his evaluation of his football team and where it is?
What I got, it's interesting you brought up the secondary part. What I got from that was almost like you're passively going public with the Cam Sutton negotiations. It's really hard for me to think that they don't want to bring Sutton back, and price is going to be a concern. Again, back to the word I used earlier regarding cornerback prospects, volatility. You don't know where they're going to be year in and year out. You know, one minor ankle tweak takes a cornerback from elite production to average. You know, that's why you see so many average cornerbacks to below average cornerbacks stick around the NFL as long as they do, and so few elite ones staying at that level for a long period of time. Sutton is a guy that you know. You've invested in already. You've already given him a contract extension, and he's playing his best football. It's a volatile market, but I would say you're looking at APY for him, $14 million, $15 million, in a pretty good buyer's market. So I don't know if they're trying to kind of suggest, you know, to make sure that it's on record in there with his agent that they feel of him this way, and that's why they're justifying what they're offering. I feel, though, he is probably a guy they want to keep. I think there's going to be a team with perhaps a bit more cash that is willing to add on another year to a versatile cornerback like Cam Sutton's contract in order to keep him long-term. Whether that's enough for Sutton, I'm not sure. But to me, it was almost like that was a veiled commentary on that process, not negative or positive so much, but just more withheld. And along with that, everybody who's not named Minka in their secondary is either a pending free agent right now, or they're entering the final year of their contract, which doesn't look real good for them to keep. So, theoretically, this won't happen, but theoretically, they could have an entirely different secondary to what they had last year, with the exception of Minka Fitzpatrick. So, I don't think he wanted to lavish too much praise on all of them, because I think he's putting together a puzzle with that. It's hard to say who they're going to keep, who they're not. And I think one decision could come after a decision on somebody else is made. And it could be this guy goes into the market, doesn't find what he wants, comes back. They end up signing him again after a week. It's sort of like what happened with Terrell Edmonds, sort of like what happened with the combination of Levi Wallace and Akella Witherspoon last year. They signed equal contracts. It kind of seemed like they went after one and ended up with both of them. So I think he's putting multiple things together and not wanting to speak too forwardly about their ability, just to not try to up their value. He's trying to work on a budget within their secondary. That's assuming you want all of their secondary back, which I'm not sure is the best idea. So, you know, maybe he really just wasn't pleased with them overall. I don't think I'd blame him for that opinion either.
No. I mean, their top two free agents are Cam Sutton and Terrell Edmonds. Okay. Other than that, I mean, and they've got room to operate here. So it's going to be up to them as to how they want to handle. Because to me, free agency, you fill whatever gaps you have, and that then sets up how you're going to draft. That, to me, is free agency.
Yep, in a lot of ways, I think it's kind of the final nail to your draft board. What can you get?
Yeah.
Where is their value? Because you don't know, especially you're drafting the back half of round one. You're not entirely sure who's going to go where. You have kind of a sense of it, but you might be on the fence. You know, we can bring in a guy, but we're not feeling good about the prospects at this position being able to play in year one so much. We want to bring in a veteran to kind of pace them. I'm not sure if we want to do that because we want, you know, philosophically, we want our rookies to be able to get on the field right away. That isn't going to work necessarily with this group, so let's sign this cornerback. Well, it turns out that, you know, this cornerback didn't want to play there. Now they have to draft a guy to come in and play right away. So it finalizes what they'll want to do. And I find myself talking about the cornerback position again. I don't think it's an accident. I think that's probably a top position of intrigue for the Steelers heading into the draft, but it is for free agency as well. So a lot of talk about the cornerback position. I think that's what it's what they need to do. It's what they need to address for the 2023 season as well as the next 3, 4, 5 years leading into it.
Daniel Snyder. Okay. So far, so good. Allegedly took on a $55 million loan through the Commanders without informing the minority owners and receiving their approval. All right. And the key is it became 16 months before buying out the individuals who can buy for 40% of the team. Now today, he charged the franchise $10 million a year to use his own private jets. And also charge the team, or put it on their budget, a $4.5 million number to put the team's logo on his personal plane. For the National Football League, is this the long national nightmare?
I think it's funny because we discussed this at Sports Illustrated on the desk when the story first broke of him selling the team. Because at first it was like, okay, well, let's not just assume he's running to sell all of it. You know, that might not be the case. You know, he bought out partners before. Maybe he's looking to bring some on just to be more, you know, cash rich than he is. We don't know yet exactly what stake he's going to sell. Each day that goes by, there's more and more stuff that in a league that an ownership group within the NFL, you know, talk about the management power of the league. They pride in secrecy, in unification, at least to the public. Snyder does so many things that breaks down the walls that they've built up, and those stories always seem to get out. So it's like, I don't know even now what his plan is. Does he want to sell his entire stake? I think at this point, if he's doing all these things, he's aware that these stories are coming to light, and that's not going to fly. If he's writing stuff off his own team's budget, that's probably more him doing that than it is the rest of the league because, you know, revenue and all of that tends to have to be collectively bargained, with the exception of, I forget the term of it, stuff that isn't within those negotiations. It's still split up and shared among teams, by and large. Mm-hmm. They have ways to maximize their own profit. Maybe Snyder sees this as his way of doing it, but it's his own team that's paying for it when he's taking out loans from the same team and the same ownership groups that he just bought out. I mean, smart financial investigative reporters are going to dig and dig and dig into this guy, and that is absolutely not the attention 31 other NFL owners want. So it's remarkable to me how it's all coming out in kind of a drip fashion. You know, just imagine if you got all that in one news day, though. You'd cover nothing but the Washington Football Team Commanders for 30 straight days, just trying to get all of the information out. But he's cordoned it off well enough for us so we can stay on top of one crisis at a time. But That'd be a tough place to work right now. I mean,
No doubt.
They've got some problems from a PR perspective, from a financial perspective, from an ethical perspective, from a legal perspective. I can't imagine they don't have just massive turnover among the upper management of that group. There's no other way to look at that.
Well, the key to me in all this is that the NFL has yet to release the final findings from Mary Jo White on the Commanders. And I think they've been hoping that the mere fact that she's doing this would force him to sell, and they can stay away from a messy report that then forces him to sell, because they haven't released it yet.
That's the real interesting question, isn't it? Because, you know, and I know I'm probably getting more Hollywood theatrical here than I should be, but...
Oh, no, go for it.
What I'm saying is that they're not... It's not an accident that they haven't released it. What they in that, basically, I honestly... It would not surprise me if they were looking for anything they possibly could to make him sell. Okay? There was a lot that made him change the name that he didn't ever want to change. Okay? There were significant actions that led to that on the direct fault of him.
Yep.
Whatever's in that report, it makes you wonder if they're not going to, you know, stick it in the same blast furnace they did with the Spygate videos if he sells the team, and that's contingent upon that. If not, they'll release it, and then the public is going to, you know, go even more bonkers over all this and force action of some type. In other words, it's kind of like, look, you have to buy. You're trying to get a stadium built, okay? You're simply not going to do that. There's just no way you, of all people, right now, is going to do that, and that makes you toxic to the rest of us. You're the one guy that can't get the stadium built. That's how much you screwed this up. We want you out of the way because this franchise needs a new stadium. That's what we care about. So here's our leverage. Sell the team, make a profit, go away. Rebuild, shake hands, and smile at you in public if we ever see you. But this has to stop. To me, that's the most plausible scenario that this represents. I hate to say this, but if I was an owner of an NFL team, that's what I'd want to do right now. If I couldn't get him to sell any other way, there's got to be something, because it's holding everything else up. He's dragging everything else down, and that's not conducive for anybody to do business. And it's time that this ends. I mean, you can't even the Jaguars watch turbulation as Snyder and Washington has created over the last 2 years. That's amazing.
Wow. I mean, I think they bought the land in Woodbridge, Virginia, to build the stadium, be like 55,000. And the Virginia legislature won't approve it. In other words, okay, what state says no to an NFL team unless
exactly
it's his team? Unless
they're
it's his team.
They're not even saying no to the team. They're saying no specifically to him. I mean, that's a real problem. People are not going to get reelected if they're supporting this. That's how toxic he is. And they all know it. It's I don't know. I think you and I talked about similar Washington-related issues last year, if not 2 years ago. And what we know is we can never say this is over. Who knows what's coming next? We've discussed having beat reporters specifically to cover the legal and financial implications of the Washington franchise. That's significant. It's really hard to cover, and every day it just feels like it's something else.
My friend, always a pleasure. You know that.
Absolutely. The pleasure is all mine. I hope you guys have a good day.